It's working for me.
It's working for me. I think there was just that overlap moment of like the feedback loop. So I think we're good to go.
Yeah. Surname. How do you pronounce it?
Yeah. Surname is Vuko.
Vuko. And yes. Where's that from? That's a great name.
Last name, actually.
Yeah.
So actually it came from my father's side, his last name. And on my father's side, they are Slovenian. So right. They actually came from Slovenia, which was then Yugoslavia, to Canada. And when they crossed the border, their name was Vukovic. And they decided to just shorten it then and there to just Vuko. And it's been that ever since.
And so it's a great name.
Thank you.
I was like, I need to find out about this name. I need to find out. Well, look, first of all, thanks so much for taking time and agreeing to speak to me. And it's lovely actually to see you in person as well.
Likewise, we were exchanging a couple messages, and myself and the whole studio have been huge followers of Visuel.
Great.
Super inspiring for us, so we're just so happy to be here.
That means a lot, because I do this in my own time, and it's nice to hear it, because sometimes I've been doing it since 2007, the website.
Yeah,
I was thinking about it, oh my god, in a couple of years, it's 20 years of doing this.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
Pure passion project, right? Now it's all about a podcast. And for me, it's all about that journey into design, because I think everyone's got great stories into how they got, what was the inspiration. And I suppose, that's what we're here to talk about today, really, Andrew, with you. And it'd be great just to find out, what was the inspiration that attracted you into design in the first place? And then maybe we can talk later on about motion design. I'd like to quiz you on a few things there. But, if we jump back, what was the inspiration to become a designer? What did you just stumble across it?
No, just speaking about myself, I'm actually a self-taught designer.
Right.
I had gone through many different types of courses in my education background. I started off in communications for about a year. Then I went to film school for about 2 years. Then I was very interested in editing in film school, from a storytelling perspective. So I was working with editing for about half a year, and somebody told me off the cuff, they're like, you should take a look at the After Effects. It's really helpful for, lower thirds and titling and some of your edit stuff. And I was like, yeah, this could be a pretty cool tool to have in my back pocket. And, I guess at that point, I think it was around 2009 or 2010.
Mm-hmm.
I just wasn't super familiar with the resources that were available for After Effects. So I just went to my local bookstore and picked up one of those Linda After Effects 7 books, and was just immediately attracted to what I was seeing in there.
Yeah.
I decided actually to spend a year just kind of unpacking that book on my own in my parents' basement, unpacking. And then after that, decided to go to school for visual effects. Thought I should get some proper education with that. And that was it was very heavy visual effects. So we're talking rooted in Maya. We were rooted in Combustion, which was the compositing software at the time. So pre-Nuke. And I got very into that at that point. And being in Toronto, there was only so many paths you could take, which was a singular path into visual effects for big feature films or television. Not a lot of opportunity for just straight up motion work. But I did actually find one opportunity that brought me into this one studio called Big Studios. They were predominantly broadcast.
Yeah.
And that's where I really started seeing the power of motion. That was my first exposure to it in a city that was, just starting to adopt it a little bit. And from then and there, it was just, more self-teaching across the board. I had worked at a number of different studios after that until I realized, I'm getting into this space, which is very visual effects-y, very kind of 3D. I'm really attracted to design and 2D motion within that. And again, not a lot of opportunity in the city for that. So I'm like, I got to create my own opportunity here. Mm-hmm. So that's when I actually decided to do my own short film, which was original. And I spent about a year to 2 years just building that as almost like a proof of concept so I could expose myself outside of the city. And so much love, so much time put into that film. And I was so taken aback at how well it was received when it was launched online. I was just like a solo artist director from Toronto who put it online, and I saw all these big publications picking it up. It was on like Adweek, it was on Communication Arts and this and that.
Oh,
and
fantastic.
It exposed me to like a global world
audience,
of notion,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. And there were a lot of like opportunities and a lot of conversations that really stemmed from that, that I thought, wow, this world is much bigger than I thought. And from there, there was no looking back. It was just a full on commitment to pure motion within the 2D space. And just rolling it back to your previous question, it's like always self-taught. I think like initiative coming from oneself is like the best way to propel yourself forward in your career, right? And that's more true now than ever. You know, you go on YouTube and you can learn anything now. And I think the most important advice I would have to anybody who's just starting education or is curious about like motion and design or anything is just to have a lot of conversations with people around it and do your own research and follow your own interests. And I think that's kind of the best way into this world right now.
Yeah. Sure. And does your film still exist?
It does.
I'd love to see it.
Yeah, it will always be up there. It's like it's a legacy project for myself. It's something that I felt, you know, it's one of a series of films that I had put out since. And the subject of the matter of the films that I always created was rooted in the creative process. So like original was always about, can we create original ideas anymore? Can we create original aesthetics anymore? And the idea was that originality is born out of combining different ideas and like having a different point of view with those ideas. Further films were on like how social media is affecting like our creative outputs and how it influences like aesthetics of creative output. That film was called Power of Like. Shortly after, then I had... I think it was the last film that I created, which was called From Nothing to Something. And that was basically how ideas are born. From like a blank canvas state to actually putting things out into the world and what that process looks like. So I think the thread that kind of has always carried through my films is creative process and like the passion behind that. And myself and the team, we have like a deep passion for process. And I think a lot of the projects that we've worked on internally here, externally, that have been the strongest is when we were really embracing process and we're finding partners who also embrace like the creative process and not having all the answers coming into it. And I think that's just what's really working for us.
Right. So you created all these films, and when did you actually start the studio? So how long has it been established?
That's a great question. It's a question that we get a lot. I would say in earnest, it was born from the release of that film, that first initial film, original 2015, because lots of opportunities were born from that. It was a very slow, organic, natural process that got us to actually say we are a studio now. From that film, it was more of like a solo directorial for hire on contract type of work and building teams around that. But as the relationships grew, the projects grew, the engagements became more consistent with like repeat clients, came like the organic building of that foundation, which ultimately was like the studio. So we were working towards operation between 2015 to 2020. And 2020 is where some interesting things started happening where we saw the world of motion changing around us. And that's where I think like the 2010s, where motion was really seen as like a
creative accessory. Okay. You would get the idea half finished and then apply motion to it. It was more of a deliverable. And around like the 2020s, brands really were utilizing it as like a key expression for themselves and like the way, and really elevating the way that they were like thinking, the way that they were acting, the way that they were feeling. Mm-hmm. And that was really interesting to us. And that's when the relationship started becoming a little bit more brand centric, more direct. And we were able to start working directly with like teams that were involved. And we saw like, okay, this is like, there's something here. There's something interesting that's starting to happen in the world of motion. Pair that with the pandemic.
Oh, yes.
Everybody remembers that. that was when I would say like, we were always working towards living in a digital world, right? So everything was being communicated via screens, but pandemic struck and then like all brand communication was like through your phone or through like digital out of home.
Well, through Zoom, like we're doing now, right?
Exactly.
Didn't exist. Then all of a sudden, there you go.
Blew up. And, since brands were predominantly like communicating via screens, there was this other form of brand expression outside of like color or static type about like, how does your brand move? And there's this whole other layer of expression that came with that. And that kind of played out over the invisible dimension of time. Right.
Yeah.
So there was like, there was always opportunity within that. But I think that the pandemic really was gasoline on fire and it sped everything up by 10 years. And not only were we excited about that pre-pandemic, but we're just like, okay, we're seeing an opportunity here. And we're also seeing our passion align with that opportunity and our expertise align with that opportunity. And yes, between 2020 till just last year, when we actually relaunched the studio with our new like point of view and our new positioning, we were working towards being extremely brand centric. That's kind of how our studio has evolved up to this point. And now we're working extremely close with brand teams. We're really helping them stand out and communicate in a competitive world.
Yes.
Right now, everybody's calling for like your attention. And so I would say overall, rolling back to your previous question, the studio has gone through different series of evolutions. But now this is the first time where it feels like true and right, as we're all deeply rooted in branding. And I would say what sets us apart from the typical motion studio is that we have a deep love and expertise and appreciation for strategy. And we always weave that into every aspect of like our process. So where motion was always seen as a deliverable and you get the idea half finished, we're always thinking about what's the outcome that you're trying to create with this project, rather than just making it look fantastic and good, which we can do anyways. It's just like, what are the metrics of success for this project, right? What's the messaging? What's the communication? So it really gives us like complete visibility into like the goals of a project or a campaign or anything, rather than just being siloed off to one part of the production process, right? And sure, I think that's where we're seeing like the most success with like the projects that we're creating.
Yes. I'm on your site now. Not that I need to be reminded of the work. You could obviously make things look beautiful, and we'll talk about motion a bit more, but I was interested in that whole process. And I think what I really enjoyed about the feature on Visuel was you showing the process behind some of the titles. Uh-huh. And I thought, we all know the end product can look amazing. And it goes back to your strategy and everything else, how you deliver that. But seeing the little rough cuts and the little stings and snippets and how that all comes together, for me, I get really excited about that because I can see how you're thinking and exposing that process, because you're obviously a specialist in the motion. My studio is, we partner with people like yourselves. And that's why I want to talk to you about how you create a motion for someone. And can that motion almost be copyrighted? Because, you know, if you think about Sonic, you know, Sonic sounds, and you you know, is motion going to go that way as well? Can you own a slide, or is there like a slide pivot thing that become ownable?
Yeah, I have a point of view on that for sure. I think it's like, I'll zoom out a bit, where I think it's very difficult but not impossible for brands to say like exclusively own a color. A typeface. You brought up like sonic branding, so like a certain like series of like notes playing against each other, but it's very difficult, but it's not impossible. But I think success and ownability really comes with all of those things, all those components playing in unison with each other, right? That helps make that brand identifiable and unique and ultimately ownable, right? You look at like the Google word mark and they have primary colors there, and but it's how about the order of those colors and like how you're seeing them that makes that ownable, along with like the, you know, the structure of that word mark. Motion is one of those key pillars and components that help work towards that ownability. But I think it's like, it's very difficult, but not impossible to do that. It just kind of everything kind of has to be working harmonically together to get to that ultimate state of ownability. And also it takes time, right? It takes time and years and years of building brand equity to be able to get to that place. So there's like things just beyond like how something moves at play, working towards like some sort of ownability there. I think there are points of views of brands that help work towards like this intangible feeling of ownability. Like we work with Spotify quite a lot, right? Year over year. And what makes Spotify an amazing partner to work with, the most apparent campaign that we work with them is Wrapped every year.
Yes. Yeah.
And something that's just known by the general public. And every year, the aesthetic is different. What they're trying to say with the design is different. But it always feels like it's rooted in this expression of Spotify as a brand, right? Mm-hmm. Every year is divergently different from the year previous to it aesthetically. But when people see it move and they see like that point of view is kind of coming through in an intangible way because it's being made with from a brand and from people high up in a brand with those types of specific points of view. And I just think that there's something interesting about that. Yeah. There's also this consideration now, which we've only heard in the past few years, of variable branding. Of brands trying not to be the same, right? And how they express themselves, and like, how can we express ourselves in like different ways while still being like rooted in the same thing? And that's like a whole different challenge for like the next like few years about like how to like make that happen, because brands sometimes are going to be speaking business to business and sometimes they're going to be speaking to like the youth of today, you know, and how do we talk to them? And there's just like, it's interesting. There's some interesting things happening there. So there's this kind of curiosity that we have about the ownability when it comes to motion. And I think that it's a challenge, but it's not impossible to do. And I think that we're really excited by that challenge.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you'll conquer it. I really am. Just going to jump back, actually. The thing about being self-taught, that's amazing. I think that that's really good. And for you to start a studio and work your way up and work with all these amazing brands and create systems for them, and fantastic. I'd like to ask one of the questions, any advice that may have been given to you, it might not have been through college or whatever, you've sort of held on to as a creative director and a founder, or just as a human, just like that you might pass on to another designer or a colleague or a friend?
Yeah, one thing I've really tried to hold on to throughout, not just from a career as just like a general human being, is to be very authentic to oneself in how you approach art, how you approach life. Just be a good human. There's like an authenticity to how people connect with each other, how they create work, that just that is just apparent,
right? Yeah. And you can feel kind of like that warmness and that energy of like an authenticity, right? And I think we've all been in situations where things don't feel authentic and they feel like a bit forced. Mm-hmm. And you can see that and you can feel that. It doesn't feel good to be on the other side when you're being fed something that's inauthentic. So I've always strived to be as authentic as possible, or as transparent to who I am as possible. And, you know, not everybody is built for everybody else, right? But like, as long as you're staying true to yourself, you can always like go to sleep at night saying, you know, I was true to me. And that goes into creating the work as well. You know, I was true to how I approached this project. I was true to what I thought was right. And honestly, I've seen such great results from that because people respond to that. And one question that came a lot, I guess, maybe earlier in the career is like, how do you develop your own style? You know?
Yeah.
How do you develop your own like ownable aesthetic? And it's like, it doesn't come from like looking at what everybody else is doing and trying to like zig when everybody else is zagging, right? It comes from like truly being inspired about what you want to create, like what's your voice and what do you want to say, and just have like a no holds bar approach to that. Be like really authentic and true, and be very aware about, you know, there's this whole AI conversation and like these new tools that are coming out and people are being reactionary and responsive to that, which is true. The future is coming, but staying true to yourself creatively and strategically will always kind of bubble to the surface and will always take precedence over what like a tool can create for you. You know, I'm sure you saw Sora OpenAI thing that was just released a couple of days ago. Well, this is hot off the presses. So basically, there's this tool that OpenAI just released. It's called Sora,
right?
And it does the same thing as any other AI tool does, is like reacting to prompts. And it actually has been building out fully fledged 60-second videos,
right?
Fully fledged like 60-second animations based on like written cues and prompts, and they look indistinguishable to the human eye on what could be created out of any studio, or they could be created out of any.
I'm on the site now.
Yeah, you're on now. Yeah.
Okay. That's a bit of a changer, isn't it?
Yeah. Because, you know, I feel like we've all seen like Will Smith eating spaghetti like a couple months ago like those kind of like visual experimentations. But this is game changing. And
yeah.
It feels like one of the questions that everybody has been getting a lot is like, is AI going to help us? Is it going to hinder us in the creative community? And we're really like glass half full here.
Sure.
And just kind of going back to what we were talking about previously, where I think good creative and good like high level strategic thinking is something that's always going to rise to the top and come from people. And it's not going to come from tools. And at least for now, maybe that's in a new GPT model or something like that. But I really think that people being their authentic selves and like being very high level on how they approach things will always be valuable in our industry. And at least how we've been using AI here, it really has been beneficial for a lot of the mundane work. It lets us focus on big picture things,
right?
High value strategic thinking, making more space for that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how we've been utilizing here and how we foresee it moving forward.
So how do you use it? Do you use it more on the production side, not to create, but to enable time saving or something like that? How would you get to use it within the realms of your studio?
I think it is more like the latter, like time saving, the mundane work, note taking, this and that.
Gotcha.
For the most part right now, there is some internal tools that we've been using on the creative. But one thing that we have to be hyper aware of right now in this landscape is the legality of it all, right? Because we're working with big brands who in some cases have their own kind of, you know, AI tools that they're developing in-house. So there's a lot of legal to be considerate of. So when we do use tools, if we are choosing to use tools, there's a lot of discussion that needs to take place about that.
And I noticed you worked with IBM.
Yes, we work with Ogilvy.
Right.
With IBM. That was a good one. Yeah.
Yes, I'm just on there now. It looks really nice. So the majority of your work, I presume, comes from agents, someone like an Ogilvy that would be like, oh, we need to plug you in to help on something. Or do clients say Spotify sound like that might come direct to you? I was just wondering how you actually get the work in. Is it the partnering or is it through direct contact with these brands as well?
Over the years, it's been both, but we've seen the majority of our work develop into a direct-to-brand relationship.
Fantastic.
I think, yeah, it's a really nice place to be because when we work directly with brands, it's like 90% of our work right now, is that we really get to truly be a third-party extension of their internal teams, like truly. That's what's really beneficial about operating as a smaller shop, is that we're able to input really quickly into direct brand teams and absorb the brand and work in parallel with them in a really efficient way. And that's what we love. That has been synchronous with our own process of like how we like to work, driving decisions together and with confidence. So we're just attracted to that type of relationship as well. How that comes in, I think internal brand teams are really smart and really talented. And sometimes mm-hmm. they want to like move fast with a smaller team. So we've been fortunate to be positioned for that. And while we are small, we operate at a really high scale. Obviously, Spotify Wrapped 2023, Google Next, year over year, have like 500, 600 types of deliverables. We need to scale up to meet those productions, right? So we had this model where we're able to scale up to a large amount of people to meet those needs. I think brands are really open to that type of flexibility now.
Wow. Super interesting.
It is. It's like, it goes back to like, I hesitate to use the word mundane work, but that kind of like doing that type of work, again, just makes space for more like high level strategic thinking, which is such a valuable place to be.
Yeah.
Right. And that's one piece of advice that I have for people in motion right now, is because the community that we're in is so focused on what's the next great plugin to use, right? That's the space that's available right now is like high level strategic thinking when it comes to like motion work and thinking about approaching motion in an extremely holistic way. That you're working in parallel with people who are making these higher level strategic decisions. And that's a great place for everybody to start working towards.
Yeah.
It's a mindset shift for our industry that needs to take place, I believe.
Yeah, it's going to come, and it's going to come quickly. I mean, just seeing that Sora website, it's like, okay, when's it going to stop? What's the next one? You know,
what's next? Oh my gosh. Yeah. What does 2023 hold for us, right? That's just, it's wild.
I was going to just say best bits of a project, worst bits of a project. Really like the early processing bits when you start twiddling and noodling and seeing what the possibilities before it becomes the final thing. I was just wondering what your favorite parts of the project are. Is it the initial creative? Is it actually the final thing coming together?
I would say, there's so many parts of the project.
Okay.
I don't want to give you a non-answer. It's project dependent. But I would say the very first weeks of a project, when we're strategizing and we're kind of going through the audits and discussing what the outcomes needs to be,
is
the most exciting and the most scary and uncomfortable part of the process. But that kind of discomfort and that fear of the unknown is what makes that part amazing. Because if you're working with like the right people, they'll be able to embrace part of the unknown of the process and generally be curious about like where things will go. And I think that the most brilliant ideas and the most brilliant work has come out of this kind of expanding and contracting process that happens within the first phase of a process, or the first phase of a production. where you explore really wide and then you contract into something that you feel is working, and then you expand outwards from that even more. There's just kind of a rhythm and the beauty that happens in those first weeks that it's hard to describe. And I think that's just what we're really attracted to. And that's why we're always trying to get earlier in the process, because we feel like that's where the magic is happening and where you're starting to really create an identity.
Yes.
And later on in the process, you figure out how to systemize that identity and how to like scale that identity to like touch points and applications. But that's the most exciting part to us in the process. And we've been really fortunate to be brought in earlier and earlier and earlier. More opportunities to kind of like influence brands through motion. One really good example of that is we have a really beautiful relationship with the Google Cloud brand team. And the most amazing piece of feedback that we received from that event that we've done for about 3 years now is that the work that we created on the solo event started to influence how Google Cloud was approaching their communication in an evergreen way.
Oh, wow.
And just to have that kind of like influence on something that was more siloed, right? Mm-hmm. And extensive brand team was inspired about, because Google was always figuring out where to go as a brand.
Sure.
At least Google Cloud, and how to evolve their brand. It was nice to see that level of influence for something that we created with motion start to pull out into the broader, the broader talent there. That's probably one of the better parts of feedback that we received last year, outside of like, this looks great. This looks amazing. Beautiful.
Thanks so much.
Because it felt like it spoke to like something that was just more all encompassing and just a deliverable. Amazing.
And I suppose it must be a bit of a proud moment, maybe. I don't know, things like Spotify Wrapped, you know. I presume millions of people are going to see this, and that's part of your studio's creation with Spotify, and it's just been absorbed by so many people. It's quite an amazing feeling. I would have thought, I don't know. It might be a scary feeling. You're like, I don't go there.
One of the coolest part of Spotify Wrapped that we all embrace as a studio the weeks after it's released, is just seeing how culturally relevant it is, where it's like, it's on like the 6 o'clock news. And my parents know what it is, you know? It's like kind of just been, it's looked forward to in a way that you look forward to Christmas or Halloween or the holidays or something like that. And there was such a wow moment that came out of that for us. But I would say the coolest part the weeks after is seeing like the meme culture adopt the visuals of whatever the year held. The meme culture for those the weeks past is hilarious, and kind of how we celebrate the launch in a lot of ways, right?
Yeah.
Another like success story from Wrapped is that you're seeing all other brands communicate through the aesthetic of Wrapped. You're seeing like car companies like Kia and Honda like share to their stories through like a Wrapped aesthetic, and like in some other industries they're sharing through like this Wrapped aesthetic, at least for the weeks after it's released, and other brands are adopting that, and that's wild to us. That's wild. That's how you kind of know that you've hit that Spotify as a brand has really hit on something special. And to be able to participate in any capacity on a project like that, I mean, we've been honored year over year. It's been such a ride with them. They're great.
That's great. I think, you know, come to time really. How do you relax? How do you actually turn off, you know, or are you one of those creatives that's always thinking, maybe when you're with your kids walking along, or do you just go, nope, that's it. It's a time to clock off.
Yes. Definitely since having a child, it has been more of a forced turning off. You know, 6 o'clock, and my wife will come in and she's like, okay, time to switch gears. And it's really nice to have that prompt to turn off at the end of the day. I think like one thing that I've always been cognizant about working on is just being more present with whatever I'm doing, whether that is work, whether that is spending time with my son or my wife, whether that's like taking a walk, getting a coffee, having a sip, is just to be present in those moments, right? And in parallel with that is like compartmentalization is like really important as well, because in our industry, sometimes you're jumping from a call to like, to the creative, to putting out this fire and celebrating this, and just kind of learning to compartmentalize those parts of your day is really, is a muscle that you need to be able to like, to grow, and you're always kind of figuring it out. It's a work in progress, but I feel like that's been a focus on that has been like super helpful for myself anyways. And it's made the work better.
Yeah, it really has.
Yeah.
That's great. It's great. And I wish you all the success. Just giving little insights into how you do things for me is great. And I look forward to seeing more of this work coming from yourself and the studio. I think it's amazing.
Oh, thank you for the kind words, and super inspired by all the stuff that you've been doing as well. And yeah, thank you for having me. This was amazing. Great combo.